Hi, everyone. This is the Female Gazing Podcast, our second. I hope you heard last week's with my friend Corey. Last week I was in Tokyo with Corey, and this week I am Skyping from my home in New York to Austin, Texas, where my best friend lives. Her name is Corinna. Hi, Corinna.
Hi.
We're happy to have you this week.
Thanks.
We try to bring the excitement. Corinna is here because I've decided that what this podcast is going to be is conversations with people who've had experiences that are different from mine. And Corinna has been very much in love twice before the age of 24. So I think that is exciting and cool and different from myself. And so I want to hear all about it. I have already. She's my best friend, but... but I want her to tell you all about it. Tell me what falling in love feels like for you. Corey last week described it as thinking of someone before yourself, even just a little bit. Mm. I thought that was an interesting definition.
Mm-hmm. I like that description. I think for me, I have a hard time describing it except for this feeling of being full. There's something that feels like this hole in you is sort of filling up and maybe spilling over. It's like this intense, I like Corey's description because I can relate to that. It's like this intense desire to give, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is that you have to give to this person. And I think that falls in line with what she said about putting them first. It's like you're suddenly thinking about how you can be there for that person and what you have to share in this way that's so fulfilling and sort of warm. That's how I would describe it, I guess. And the other thing I would say is that it's very much about feeling close and comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I've often said that when I fall in love, I'm going to know that I have by the fact that I freak the hell out and call you immediately. Did you find it scary either time, both times?
Definitely when I was a dumb teenager. Who's not scared of anything when it's the first time? And also, there's this feeling of, when I was really young, it was this feeling of, am I supposed to be feeling this way? Is it okay for me to call this love and to say I'm in love and feel in love? Did I make it up? Does that make it less valid, I guess, because I'm a dumb kid, as opposed to being able to take real ownership over that? And that was something that I definitely struggled with. My experience was much more internal and much less shared with other people because there was so much insecurity and sort of second guessing on my part, where it's now it's like, you know, I'm gonna stand in the street and shout it to the moon that I'm in love with my boyfriend. Uh-huh. You know, I don't care who sees or who, you know, there's something that's, I have such an easy time taking ownership of that feeling. It's easy in a way that it wasn't then,
because you can move about freely without like parental supervision, or because you're more aware of your feelings and the way your heart works.
I mean, probably some of both, probably mm-hmm. a good mix of both. But there's something, I really do think that it's, you know, it's that sort of Freudian debacle of, I have this internal experience, but does it jive with what society says is okay? I think that's why, I mean, I've always related to heroines of novels who go through that, you know, that conflict with social norms, and sort of understood that, I mean, in my own kind of small way, that that's very real, that our experiences really are sort of approved or disapproved of by, you know, our culture and society and people around us. And to be honest, there was embarrassment on my part too. You know, I worried way too much about what other people thought when I was in middle school and high school. And not that that still doesn't matter to me. I don't pretend to be completely over it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all worry about what other people think at times, but now at least in terms of being able to express my feelings, I don't worry about the judgment of others the way that I did then.
Do you think that you needed to experience the flaws in your old relationship in order to see, first of all, the wonderful things in this relationship, and second of all, how to overcome the things that maybe were hard last time? What do you think you learned that made this better, or do you think that this would have been exactly as wonderful as it is without that experience?
I really do think it goes back to what I was just saying, that the sort of fear that really held me back from experiencing things more fully and more comfortably was something that I really learned from, and that has influenced all of my relationships and friendships, even, I would say, just in terms of wanting to be more open and honest and wanting to take ownership of those feelings and of what I want in a relationship and not be afraid to ask for it. And also helps me appreciate, I think there was something of, there was regret. That's what I'm trying to say. I guess there was regret that I learned from, sort of regretting particular actions or not acting, not speaking up, not saying something, not doing something about how I felt or sticking up for what I wanted in the past that I've since learned from.
I have kind of a personal question. When I was in high school, I liked this boy a lot, and he was my first, like, real kiss. And he's also the person who I've kissed in my whole life who I liked the most. And it, to this day, is the best. It was a great kiss. And I asked someone the other day, I was like, I think I'm kind of hoping that someone comes along who I like as much as I liked that guy, and that that's what magically makes my future kisses as awesome as that one was. And I said this to a friend the other day, and he was like, no, it was probably just because you were really young and it was your first kiss. And I was like, that's really depressing, and I hope that's not actually true. So what do you think? Do you think that nothing is as good as your first kiss because it was your first kiss? Or do you think that they're better now because your relationship is better?
I definitely would have to side with the second option. Because our experiences were very different. Because my first kiss was awful, and I was so angry. It was a classic Corinna storming off with, you know, heels clicking and friends left wondering what just happened to her. And, you know, I was furious. I was very angry after my first kiss. My first several kisses were much more terrifying than anything else, to be honest. So I would have to side with the latter option. But I love your story. I think that's a really good story. And I do understand what you mean. And I think, you know, the thing that's awesome about kissing someone you love is that it really means something. And not that kissing isn't fun and great anyway. I mean, obviously human beings do it for a reason because, you know, there's pleasure in it. But it's extra awesome when it matters, you know, and when it's this really wonderful, intimate way of, you know, of experiencing love with someone and sharing a particularly intimate experience and sensation that you don't share with anybody else. I think that's what I like about it. That gives it so much meaning too. It's only something that you do with this one person, and it's very intimate that way.
I mean, I didn't really know you when you were with your first boyfriend. Right. When I met you, how would you describe your situation?
Despair. Dark, black despair. That's how I would describe it. That's how I felt when you met me.
That's how you looked.
I'm just grateful that we're still friends.
I think despair is a really good word. Describe to me your thought process of, I mean, you call it a tragedy. Like, you thought that that was the most epic tragedy that had ever befallen any human being, right?
Yes and no. I think it's more that I like to hold everyone's feelings and personal experiences as valid in and of themselves for them. You know, I don't like comparing losses or gains, you know, between people. And I think that's, I hate to put it that way, because of course it looks very minor in the grand scheme of world affairs and, you know, everyone else's troubles and lives. But for me, it was a really enormous loss.
And you were quite miserable, if I may use that word. And it seemed to me you thought, you know, you would never have that wonderful thing again. But you were wrong. You have an even more wonderful thing.
I do.
You do. So what would you say?
Significantly less stupid this time.
What would you say to college, Corinna?
You know, it's funny. I did an exercise that reminds me of this with my counselor once. I think it's called EMDR or something like that. And it's where you sort of go back into your memories to tap into experiences you had and then bring up those feelings. And then you actually, like, imagine yourself in your safe place, in your sort of comfortable, safe, happy place, talking to that, like, child version of yourself and sort of experiencing that in your mind. It sounds really goofy, but it's actually really wonderful and was very moving, especially the first time that we ever did that. And it reminds me of this because there's this part of me that at the time, you know, all I wanted was, like, sympathy. I just remember being so starved for, you know, contact and a hug. So I think the first thing that I would do, because, you know, going off to college where you don't know anybody, you're 1,000 miles away from your home, it's really hard, especially when you're going through something really hard where normally you would have your friends and your family to lean on for support and you could get that hug or talk to that, you know, person who really gets you and you feel comfortable with and whatever. So first of all, I would be that for myself if I could, you know, I would just say it's okay and you can cry and here, I'll give you a hug. But I think the other thing that I would tell college Corinna is, first of all, to have confidence in yourself. Believe in you independently of anybody else, of any what anybody else thinks or wants from you, or just believe in your strength and potential and goals. Because I think that's something that's really hard to keep in mind when you experience a rejection. It feels like that person's opinion or choice is everything, you know? And so I think just reminding myself that that's not everything and believing in yourself, which sounds hokey. I feel like everything I have to say sounds very cliche. And the other thing is just that it will get better. It will get easier. And, you know, I didn't believe that. And I heard that from so many people. And I used to think that that was the most tragic part, to be honest, was that it got better, that the grief was less and that you moved on. But now I see that that's just part of life, that healing is a process and you just have to get through the part where it feels like losing those memories or losing even that intensity of that strength of feeling, whether it's good or bad, I guess, looks like a really sad experience, that it really leads you to something wonderful. And, you know, it's that stupid when one door closes, another door opens. It's very true. I mean, we wouldn't say a cliche like that if it wasn't true, I guess.
College Corinna once said to me that, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years in the future, if that high school boyfriend called you up and said, I'm ready now, that whoever you were married to, you would consider leaving because that boy was so important to you.
I don't remember saying this.
Oh, you said this. What do you think of that? Do you think you were being young and silly, or?
I think it goes back to what I was saying, where when you're in that place of sort of mourning a relationship, it's hard to envision anything good coming. You know, it's really hard. I mean, it's really hard to imagine what the future would be like. And you feel like this intensity of feeling is going to last forever. And I'm just going to live with it always. And I'm always going to feel the same way. And there's this sort of obstinacy in not just youth, but also in the aftermath of, you know, a breakup that I think anyone could relate to and say, yes, of course. I mean, that's how, I mean, you feel that, you know that in that moment. It just doesn't make it true. And, you know, people say lots of things that they take back later. So I think it's sort of silly, but I think that it's a very telling sort of statement of what it's like, you know, to be on the other side of something that felt like it could be forever.
So it was a drug-induced statement, the drug, yes, of the ex-boyfriend's spit.
It was a gross exaggeration and lack of perspective.
So current boyfriend, you are safe. Fear not.
Can I say one more thing about what you were saying with that statement, too, though?
Yeah.
Because I really do feel, I know I'm getting sort of stupidly defensive about it, but I really do feel like I want to defend the fact that when you say that, you're also thinking of this hypothetical, you know, future partner that doesn't exist and that you don't know, and considering something that you do know, you know, and that you have maybe sort of an oversensitivity to at the time. And so it's really hard to say, I mean, I feel like it's impossible to say that when it's hypothetical like that, that you wouldn't consider the idea, because maybe because maybe those feelings will still be there, or, you know, and maybe they won't. But I think it's sort of one of those things that I'm not sure that anybody could say for sure they wouldn't consider, because maybe you'll be in some terrible marriage that you're miserable with and was a huge mistake. I mean, that happens to people. It's very, you know, unfortunate that it does, but it does. So I think especially in that situation when it's hypothetical, of course, now I wouldn't even let anybody remotely, you know, ask me that question, because it would just be ridiculous, and it sort of loses its meaning when there's like a real person in the picture. You know what I mean? And people change.
That's true. Do you mean you or these guys?
Both. So again, I think with the hypothetical nature of that scenario, you don't know who's like what at that point. You know, you don't know what you're like. You don't know what your childhood sweetheart is like. And you certainly, you know, don't know what this hypothetical unknown made-up husband is really like. So people change.
I feel like I'm sounding very down with love in this whole thing. But I really kind of want to ask, do you think you were wrong in high school? I guess that's not a very helpful question to ask. I feel like you've kind of answered it in that clearly your feelings were valid. You know, they were what you felt. How could they not be valid? They existed. But, you know, you had this boy who you were, you know, you wanted to marry, and he was the end-all and be-all. And now this boy is the be-all and end-all. I guess the question would be, does the realization of something better make the other invalid? But I don't think that's a very helpful question.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I can see why you want to ask it, but you're right. I think we both sort of know the answer, which is, no, it doesn't make it invalid. It does, you know, lead to the sort of, I mean, I do understand the question of what, of were you wrong, you know, because there's this part of me that has to answer yes. I mean, that's sort of the whole point, is that I had a perspective that was, I was wrong that I couldn't be as happy or even happier again with somebody else. And I was wrong that there was nothing, like you said, nothing good coming. And I was wrong, I will say, I was wrong to place so much weight on the rejection, if that makes any sense. I was wrong to place so much weight on the breakup. And it's sort of what you and I were talking about the other day with jobs and applying for jobs and the anxiety, I should say. But I think a lot of our friends and, you know, sort of generation right now coming out of college and hunting for work sort of feels where there is this big anxiety around jobs, especially jobs that we really want, but you can't place everything on it, because if you do, then you're closing yourself down to the possibility that there's something better out there and that the universe sort of has a plan for you, which, you know, I don't believe in fate or anything like that, but I do believe that there's so much that happens that's out of our control. You can only control yourself. You can only make choices for yourself. And beyond that, you're at the mercy of how others react and the choices that others make. And you can't control that. And letting go of that is sort of the key to it. And it takes lots of practice. And maybe that's what life is for, you know, is to practice accepting when someone makes a choice that isn't you, you know, or that isn't what you hoped they would choose or what you were planning for or whatever. And you have to be ready to say, that's okay, because there's someone else who will, you know. And it's just leaving life open for new things, which is all very cliche, but once again, I will say that I think it's cliche for a reason, because there's some sort of universal truth there that we all experience. And I guess, yeah, I guess I sort of have this little story, you know, that was how I learned that. one of the ways. Of course, we learn it in several ways, as you were just saying. You know, it's not just relationships, it's jobs, it's friendships, it's everything. Yeah, but this was a big way that I learned that.
What's one thing that you think you could have or should have done in that period of misery, like, that you would suggest to someone who is in that place that you were in? You know, you can really speak to that. So, you know, if there are people listening who are, you know, after that first big breakup in the world is the most tragic place, what would you tell them?
Just be good to yourself. That's what I would say. Because I don't think there's any point in shutting down those feelings, in repressing what you're experiencing. But there's also a point where experiencing becomes wallowing in a way that can be very, you know, that can be potentially really self-destructive, actually. And I think it's sort of what I would go back and say to myself, that you just have to stay true to yourself and, you know, be good to yourself, whether that looks like showing yourself some love in really small sort of everyday ways, or whether it's some tough love, like, you know what, I'm going to feel a lot better if I go and work out today. You know, and that's going to help me, you know, feel better. But it may also be like, I'm not going to beat myself up for eating dessert because I'm not feeling great and this tastes awesome. You know, so it's just sort of being good to yourself in tough ways, in ways that are good for you and ways that are constructive. You know, getting focused on other things, doing other things that you love doing by yourself. So that was one of the things that I discovered that really helped me so much, was that, you know, doing things like going to a museum and looking at art just by myself was so uplifting and fulfilling and helpful in helping me feel okay being on my own and appreciating beauty and life, you know, and sort of the beautiful things about life and the things that that make it worth getting up every morning. You know, whether that's things that are intellectually challenging or creative or experiences that we have in, you know, nature, in our city, just finding other ways to feel, I guess, connected to life. You know, whether that's, for me, that was art and trees, you know, parks and exercising and new friendships. Or it may look like really forging ties with your community in a new way, whatever that looks like, you know, or new projects or something like that. So I think that's all very important, to just reminding yourself that you're awesome and that life is beautiful sort of with you in it, and you can appreciate it and, you know, help make it that way as an individual.
I think that sounds great.
It's hard. It's not, I mean, I'm not pretending that it's easy, but it just takes a lot of time. And I think the beauty of it is that one experience builds on the next. You know, you just need the one experience where you can say, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay with myself just being me by myself. You know, you just need one or two of those, and it really kind of can snowball, I suppose. I think, but those experiences build on each other. And I think it's really important to be, that is one of the other things I will say that I learned, is that I think it's really important to be in that place in order to be open to new things and new people. I think it's really hard to be open to a new, better, you know, beautiful, wonderful love if you're still struggling with being okay on your own, if that makes sense, of not being in a pair. And if you're still, you know, if your definition of relationship still centers very much around, you know, a significant other that's not a best friend or, you know, family, I think, like, recognizing that you can still give and, you know, express love with other people, even if it's not in a romantic way, and it can be, you know, very fulfilling too. And I think that's a really important part to finding happiness after a hard breakup.
I had one more thing that I wanted to spring on you. I found this poem the other day, and it reminded me of you, and I just wanted to read it to you and see if you had any thoughts on it.
Okay.
It's by Andrea Gibson. She's a spoken word. She's awesome. I love her. I'll have to send you some stuff. And the poem reads, "The leaves are all falling, and they're falling like they're falling in love with the ground. And the trees are naked and lonely, I keep trying to tell them new leaves will come around in the spring, but you can't tell trees those things.
I love that. That's a beautiful image. No, that was totally me. It was a sad, lonely tree losing all my leaves and feeling like, you know, they were all going somewhere else and withering. And it's right, you can't tell the tree. I guess that goes back to your question about this hypothetical scenario. It's like, can't make someone in that place who's like the tree see what's coming. They have to figure that out themselves. They have to just do it. You can't make them see that. But the thing that's beautiful about people is that we can tell each other things and listen and, you know, talk and communicate. So there's not the same sort of wall there as the poem paints, I think, in reality, because, you know, as you and I can both attest to, we've been really supportive of each other in tremendous ways, you know, through situations that looked sad, yes, grim at the time. And while neither of us could make the other one get over it, get over the experience, move on, feel better, we can't just snap our fingers and make it happen or make us see, we had to just do it. For me, it was that poem, you know, it was you trying to help me understand that this is not the end of the world. It's not the end of love. And for you, it's been more me trying to show you that love can happen tomorrow, you know, that it's coming, that it will happen, because I know. But yeah, that's the beautiful thing, is that unlike the poet and the tree, friends can tell each other all sorts of wonderful, helpful, supportive things.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, where I would be without my best friend.
You can yell anything you want at a tree. They're just not particularly receptive.
Right.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for being on the show. I think that was a lot less painful than you expected.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way that while we started thinking about, you know, what is it like being in love a second time, really turned into more thinking about what is it like sort of recovering from love that failed and how you come to discover new love. That's even better because experience helps everyone. I don't know. That's a dumb thing to say. I guess what I'm saying is that I don't think it has as much to do sometimes with the fact that my one experience helped me learn things to make this new experience being in a relationship that's so much healthier and more fulfilling in so many ways better or stronger. You know, it's more that any experience helps. And when you're a dumb kid, you don't have any. And I'm still a dumb kid, but at least, you know, I've got a few years of experience and trial and error on me now. And so, of course, all of that is part of growing up and maturing and learning to be in healthy relationships. It just takes practice, I think.
Well, thank you. Next week I will find someone. Gosh, I'm running through all my best friends. I don't know who I'll find now.
I think start interviewing strangers.
Maybe. Okay, well, thank you everyone for tuning in. I'll hopefully be back next week with somebody else. And we will miss Corinna dearly.
But you won't love them as much as you love me.
There are a few people who I could bring on the show who I would love more than you. So it's a pretty tall order to fill.